Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Okie doke. Okay, talk to Yvonne.
Hello.
Okay, that doesn't mean.
That's not really Yvonne. Talking. It's not it either.
Don't lick the microphone either.
It's not ice.
Microphone is not to actually be touched. You just get a couple inches away from it and talk. No, really, don't lick the microphone. Okay, Alex, we're trying to get started. Why don't you go back to your game?
Yeah.
I asked you not to do that. And don't tell me it's opposite day.
It is opposite day.
Yes, I know, that's my interruption noise. What are you interrupting with this time? Okay, that's the end of the interruption. Are you just doing it every time you change the page?
Yeah.
Dude, please. I thought you were done and you were gonna walk away, but you sat on top of my desk. And you're sticking your feet in my face.
Okay. No. I was not sticking your feet. Your face.
Until I said that. Okay. Okay, down. God, that hurts my ears. It goes right into my headphones. Please. Is this where we lock you in a closet now?
What?
Should I lock you in a closet? What's wrong? What's wrong? Tell me what's wrong. Because he was saying, he wasn't stopping me from doing my podcast at all. And I'm like, well, you're sitting there yelling at the microphone and sitting on my lap. And he's like, how does sitting on your lap stop you from doing anything? I'm like, well, I have to concentrate. And he's like, does sitting on your lap turn off your brain?
The kid's logic is pretty.
He's like, no, solid. I don't think so.
Oh, man. Okay.
Okay. All right. Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Thursday, March 24th, 2016. It's a little after 2:30 UTC. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is here. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello!
So, our plan for today, we are going to, of course, do Election 2016 and everything associated with it. We are going to talk about the attack in Brussels. We are going to talk about Apple, since they had an event and more Apple versus FBI stuff as well. And then we'll wrap it up with a lightning round for anything else we didn't manage to get in. In the meantime, anything interesting happened this week, Yvonne, other than those things?
Well, I had to go to a doctor.
Oh, okay.
Well, they haven't found that anything's wrong with me, but
okay.
I've been having episodes of accelerated heart.
Oh, that's rates. Never good.
Yeah. I don't know why that is, because I do exercise regularly. Well, when I went to the doctor today, look, they checked my blood pressure, which is a great. My pulse at the time I was there, I wasn't having an episode, was fine. They did an EKG. It came out normal.
Yeah.
So I have been referred to what he said. Listen, okay, well, I don't know. Look, there isn't anything. Obviously, check you out. You're in good shape. There isn't anything obvious. So referred to me to a cardiologist.
Mm-hmm.
So they can plug in this little portable thing
to try to catch around. Something when something's happening.
Right. Yeah. Yes. It'll monitor me for 24 hours and see if they can pick up on something on the data. Okay. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, good luck with that. I mean, it's like you never want to be messing with that kind of thing.
No, but you know, it's like one of those things about getting older.
Yeah. You have stuff in the family?
Yeah, I do, but it's not that bad, whatever there is. So, I mean, and even, like, what I have is not exactly, like, I mean, look, my blood pressure is, like, fantastic and all that kind of stuff, so I don't know. I don't know what it could be. It could be stress, you know, very
common.
A lot of very stressful things have been going on. Lately. That could be what the issue is.
Fun. Like I expect it, and I like, you know, you mentioned, like, you go to the gym, you do all the stuff you're supposed to do and blah blah blah. You know, I don't. So, right. I mean, at some point, like, that's going to catch up with me, you know, I fully expect it. It's like, I know I should be doing so much more of that. Like, I should be doing more exercise. And like, when I do it, I like it, but you know, it always loses out when there's like,
but you're the creature of routine. I don't understand. You like, if you put it. You see, what I did about this is that I am signed up for a class.
Yeah, yeah.
Tuesdays and Thursdays.
And you always go.
Right, because I'm signed up for the class, so I got to be in class.
Look, the thing is, to me, it's always the matter of, like, I can't imagine taking an additional X hours out of my already, you know,
but you see, the thing is, if you wind up with a fucking heart attack, okay, all right.
I know.
And like, whatever, then, you know, this is one of these things. It's like, yeah, it's there. Well,
for a while, I was doing the thing with, like, the Fitbit or the Fitbit clones from other people where I was trying to do the 10,000 steps. And that actually was working pretty well. I mean, it was only like walking. It wasn't anything else. But I was making sure. I mean, I didn't make the 10,000 every day or whatever, but I would, you know, I would balance things off and I would be conscious about it. And I was like, oh, for a while, like, this is almost 2 years ago now, I was doing the whole thing where I was doing the step tracking. Plus I had a thing that, you know, translated that into calories, and I was putting my food into the little app. And so,
and I remember you were doing pretty good with
that. I was doing pretty good. I lost a lot of weight. I was doing, well, I fell out of it, but I should go back to it. But like, what my little technique there was, like, you know, if I didn't have you know, it had like a calorie budget for the day, right? And if I hadn't yet, I forget the exact way it worked, but it would balance off how much I ate versus how much I exercised. And if I had not yet exercised enough for the thing I wanted to eat,
right,
next,
you were going. Right, you would have to go out and
yeah, I'd be like, I can't eat dinner until I walk 5,000 steps or whatever. Right, and then I would go walk 5,000 steps and come back and eat.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't know.
Makes sense.
But I haven't done that in a while now.
That wasn't a bad thing.
And I'd cut out like most of the like sodas and stuff, but those are back. You know, I still don't do caffeinated ones, but I still like, you know, like drinking orange sodas all the time and stuff.
Orange soda. What are you, from the island of Wapuni Woo?
Every once in a while, I'll switch it out with grape, but they don't have that in most of the vending machines.
Okay.
But yeah.
You know, I drank orange soda when I was like, I guess up until I was a teenager.
Mm-hmm. I like orange soda. Of course, it has no oranges in it. It's just orange colored.
Okay, first I had
kind of neon orange too. It's not
okay.
It
so
doesn't
as
look
we're
like
talking, it. Like right now, first we had like Tickle Me Pink ask me for a request on Skype to be
a
friend.
Tickle Me Pink. What are you talking about now?
So, well, I don't know. I just got distracted. Tickle Me Pink asked me. I keep so now I have Dana Stein Helfer would like to ask you on Skype. Hi, Ivan Bo. I'd like to ask you as a contact. What do you think? Yay or nay?
Yay! Live wild. No, I decline these things all the time. I get
I'm blocking them right now.
Yeah, I usually don't actually report them for abuse, but I
do with every single one. The hell with them. There you go. The other one was Pink Glee Fruity Angel.
Pink Glee Fruity Angel.
Yep. That sounds like, you know.
These are people really requesting to be contacts of yours in Skype.
Yes.
You used to have this problem in Facebook. Now you have it in Skype.
I had the problem in Facebook. No,
now, I've never had this problem on Facebook, but I've had it in Skype.
Basically, all the suggested people that I had as friends on Facebook were either strippers or hookers, basically, for a while. I realized that it had to be, it was a friend of mine who apparently basically just really hung out with only like strippers or hookers.
Uh-huh.
Well, he doesn't anymore, so there you go.
Anyway. Nothing else exciting from my side of the world. We had both Clinton and Biden in town within a couple miles of here recently, but I they didn't actually get in the way of my traffic because they like close highways and crap for Biden. I don't know that they do that for Hillary yet, but yeah, there were all kinds of warnings about how traffic would be impacted and blah blah blah, because you know Biden was flying into the Payne Field right near here, and he was giving a speech in Seattle, and Clinton was giving a speech like, you know, 2 miles from where I am right now at some like Union Hall next to Boeing or something. And so yeah, we had that excitement, but I didn't see it. Oh, the other thing that was happening in Seattle that I should mention that was not on our agenda. And, you know, I don't know if we'll have enough for a lightning round at the end or not really, but there was this guy who climbed a tree.
Yes, I saw that. And apparently it closed off part of downtown Seattle.
Yeah, he climbed this 80-foot tree and just sat there.
And he kept pelting people with like
branches and stuff. He would break off branches and throw them down. And they're apparently actually really worried about that. This is like the city tree that they use as a Christmas tree every year for the town, for the city of Seattle. And apparently they're really worried that he did enough damage to the tree that it might not survive. So they're bringing in like tree doctors and stuff just to check it out. But yeah, he was up there for, I think, around 24 hours in the end before he eventually climbed down on his own. He sat down under the tree for a while, and then they brought in a stretcher and took him off for evaluation.
Interesting.
But the other thing of note is that in the middle of that time, Seattle's superhero, Phoenix Jones, tried to come in and help, but the police wouldn't let him.
Oh, that's a shame.
So if you haven't seen Phoenix Jones...
I have not.
This is one of, apparently there are a number of these around the country. But it's basically a guy who dresses up
wearing a suit.
Yeah, he dresses up in like a superhero suit and goes out to try to fight crime.
Well, it's not working very well, probably. However, I just noticed in the news stream it came up that apparently two trucks crashed in Florida, littering highway with Frito-Lay chips and beer.
Well, there you go.
I mean, there you go. You can have a party right there in the middle of I-95.
Okay. I think this opening segment is going absolutely nowhere fast, and we should take a break.
We're going sideways faster than a freaking
look. Yeah, like this is not like... We've probably already lost all of our listeners for the week, and we're not going
to
get past
this. We didn't even say anything about what a disaster it was to get this show started today, but that must have crossed. Anyway, all right.
So, anyway, yes, let's take a break. We'll come back, and this time we're going to do the election first, and then we'll move on to the other stuff. So we will be back after this.
this is a break. Oh, yes, this is a break. This is a break because no one gave me any suggestions. I told you, I warned you. So this is a break. This is a wonderful break. A wonderful break. Yes, indeed, this is a break. This is a break in the middle of Curmudgeon's Corner. Yes, this is a break. Yes. This is a break. Break. Yes, this is a break. Yes, this is a break. Break. Yes, it is a break. And now the break is over.
Da 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 da, we're back.
Ba ba ba.
So,
elections. Look, it's even in the New York Times. An agitated man climbed an 80-foot sequoia tree in downtown Seattle and defied efforts to bring him down for more than 24 hours.
Yeah.
And that's a story in the front page of the website for the New York Times somewhere.
Isn't that excellent?
Yep.
Yeah.
So,
you know,
so
not every city has this.
We should climb a tree.
You know, we were just talking about how much I go to the gym and how athletic I am. I'm not sure climbing a tree is the right thing right now, but you know,
especially not an 80-foot tree. You know, I mean, if you fell, that would hurt.
Yes, that would. I kept expecting that. I mean, I'm glad the guy got down on his own and they took him off to the hospital for an evaluation that he probably needs. But I kept expecting to hear that what happened is he fell asleep and fell off the tree and died, you know, but that did not happen.
Well, thankfully that did not happen.
So, yeah. You know, so when you hear these kinds of stories, there are a couple of things that you very often expect to hear next. One is taken off for a psychological evaluation. The other is under the influence of drugs and alcohol. One of these two things is usually in play, if not both.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure. Anyway, all right. Did we mention what we were going to talk about in this episode?
Yes, I gave the agenda right up front.
Oh, we did. That's right.
Election, Brussels, Apple, and then a lightning round for anything
left over. So let's jump to the election.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Let's do that. Okay. So
Hillary's still winning.
Okay. Now, but here's the thing.
Yes.
I'm already going to the Republicans.
Hillary's winning. We're done with them.
So a number of people have been doing the math on delegates for Trump.
The only one you should trust is me because I'm better than all the rest.
True. Okay. All right. Now, a number of them are coming up that Trump is just a little bit short.
So where we are, what all these people are doing. So the 538 is one of them. The New York Times also did one of them. What they're doing is they're modeling all of the rest of the states based on demographics and trying to predict what the vote will be in all of the future states based on the votes in the states so far.
Yep.
And what they tend to find is that if you look just at pledged delegates, he's going to come up just a little bit short.
Just a little bit short.
Now, there are a couple of things to keep in mind from this when you're looking at it. One is the type of modeling that they're doing doesn't take into account how the dynamics may continue to change. You know, so they're,
well,
they're sort
these
of,
are all estimates.
I know. I'm just saying. So these are estimate is the best you can do. And doing the demographic estimate is a great way of doing it. But like one thing that is missing is how does the dynamics of who comes out to vote change as the messaging evolves as the next few states come in.
I'm with you.
So wait. That's number one. The other thing is they're not looking specifically at the uncommitted delegates yet because I was actually about to bring up where was this article? Let me bring it up real quick. There was a Vox article that was outlining the different types of it's an explainer of contested conventions. Okay. And there we go. The article was published on March 23rd, called Contested Conventions Explained by Vox. And here's the important part. Whenever I've spoken about contested conventions before, I'm talking about a very specific scenario where we get to the first ballot at the convention and nobody has a majority on the first ballot. But what they pointed out is the term is actually very loosely used, and that's actually only one of three scenarios that people sometimes call contested convention. The first of the three is actually where at the end of the election cycle, no one has a majority yet, but they're just like the Democrats have superdelegates, the Republicans have uncommitted delegates. Right now, there are 18 of them that are designated, but by the time we get to the end, it's expected to be a few dozen of these, possibly as many as 100. And so we may be in a scenario where those few dozen to 100 delegates actually make the difference.
Right.
As to whether or not...
That's what it seems the math is showing.
Well, again, it's not... This is... I'm hesitant to say...
This is math and modeling and certain predictions.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. It's not the plain-out math. The plain-out math, which is based only on what we actually already know so far, has Trump needs 52.2% of the remaining delegates to win. Now, that includes these delegates that will end up being uncommitted. So some of those remaining delegates are ones that he can get through primaries and caucuses. Some of them will be people he ends up having to convince to vote for him. But 52.2% of the rest, straight up math, what the people who are modeling add are... By our best guess as to how Michigan will go, by our best guess as to how this state will go,
yep.
And what they end up modeling is that when you go through all of those states, modeling them with demographics and all, we're right at the edge. We are right at the edge.
It's very just, you know,
where a little bit, if Trump is a little bit stronger, he wins straight up.
Right.
If he's a little bit weaker, then we have one of these contested scenarios. The first and like the most likely contested scenario is not the first ballot thing. It's, you know, maybe Trump needs some of these uncommitted delegates to push him over the edge. But then the question is, how many of them do you need and how do you convince them? And we talked a little bit about that on previous shows in terms of the various ways you can convince these guys to go for you. The second type of the contested convention is when you actually get to the first ballot and nobody has a majority and you have to go to multiple ballots. The third kind, which could occur, back to this Vox article for a second, the third kind could occur even if Trump has a majority of the pledged delegates, is shenanigans to try to change the rules or do other things to take it away from him anyway. So anyway, but math-wise, the bottom line, and again, go to electiongraphs.com. Mine is the best, including my commentaries. The most recent one on the Republican side was published on the 17th. No, that's wrong. Why does it say the 17th?
Yeah, that's not right.
Refresh. There we go. The 23rd. Was still in the contested zone barely. And I went through some of these scenarios there. But the bottom line is that right now Trump does not have a majority, but he's very, very close. And all he needs again is to be hitting, like in the elections that were this week, we had, Arizona and Utah. Trump got 58 delegates out of Arizona, but Cruz was over 50% in Utah, so he got all of Utah's delegates and got 40. So 58-40 was actually like 60% Trump. You know, and that was enough to improve his position and drive him closer to a win, like, because it's over the 52 number, which was a little higher before that happened, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so we're still going to be looking at this like contest by contest, potentially all the way through June. And then there's a non-trivial chance that even when we get to the end of June, we're going to be saying, holy shit, these like 56 or 60 or 70 or however many there end up being uncommitted delegates are going to be what makes the difference between a Trump win and an out and out brawl at the convention.
Okay. So if he's short, do you predict a brawl at the convention? Are we expecting riots?
Oh,
is he already Trump riots. Already called for them?
I think that depends on how the convention goes. I think if we go to a convention where he's short, and he does not get it. So he loses, he doesn't.
No, I'm not saying even before he gets to that. If the numbers just show him short, even before anything happens at the convention,
I think it all depends on whether the Trump people think they're being fair to him or whether he thinks they're being fair. And anything, and by the way, the definition of fair is anything that results in him winning.
Thank you.
Anything that does not result in him winning is not fair to Trump.
Right.
Okay. So if we start getting, look, all of the things that can go here, I think the chances of things going absolutely nuts all occur if Trump loses or if the establishment is trying to do sneaky things like disqualify his delegates or try to do a rules change that lets delegates vote contrary to how they're pledged or anything like that. Then I think we start getting into that situation where his followers go apeshit. But if you don't have that, I still think, like, I've been reading all of these things about the contested convention. I mean, and there's certainly, there are a lot of people talking about how Cruz has been playing the delegate game behind the scenes. So a lot of the Trump delegates are actually Cruz supporters behind the scenes. And once they're freed up on a second ballot, they're going to go for Cruz. I don't know how much of this is true, how much of it is false, how much is spin. I think the answer is we really don't know. You know, if we get into this scenario, what I expect that you're going to start having happen is that we're going to get these, what are there, some 2,400 and something delegates to the Republican convention. We're going to start seeing these people, like, stalked by the campaigns and by reporters to try to find out exactly who these 2,400 people are. What are they thinking? How dedicated are they to their candidates or not? And you know, would they support various things? And you're going to see that kind of stuff. But I don't want to dismiss, like I said, we're right on the edge. I mean, Trump could still pull this out and have a straight flat out majority before we get there. It is very much in the realm of possibility still, but we're right on that edge.
But he's on the edge, and I keep seeing polls, the very few ones that we have for upcoming states, and they're not, you know, clear cut like victories for him. I mean, now let's be clear, there aren't that many polls to look at right now.
Yeah, it's very frustrating, actually. If you go to look at the next few states, we've got jack shit.
It's like everybody already spent their money on damn polls. It's like they expect this damn thing to be wrapped up before now, and you know, it's not. And so they got no money to spend on these damn polls.
Yeah, I mean,
and like, so I'm looking at, for example, one of the ones that I saw, recent poll that I saw, was Wisconsin.
Yeah, and that's the next big one. We've got like North Dakota or something
Wisconsin
coming up.
But it's, had Cruz it's expected ahead. To be, I mean, by one, only one point.
Right.
But still. So, yeah. It's like
one and, of and Wisconsin's where I'm a like, winner takes all, by the way. So that 1% is all that matters.
Right. And so, I mean, you keep looking at numbers like this and you're like, well, damn it. I mean, he's just not walking away with it any way that you slice it.
Right. And I think, you know, bottom line is if Cruz starts getting stronger in some of these.
Right.
Then yeah, then we'll go straight to the contested convention. And then, you know, Cruz will make the case that, you know, he should be the nominee, even though he got less delegates. And then if we get into a second ballot, maybe that happens or maybe something or who knows. But at the same time, you know, with a handful of winner takes all states in his pocket, that's all Trump needs to stay above the 52% pace he needs to wrap it up. So some of those need to be taken away from him by Cruz or Kasich. or he has to do really badly in some of the proportional states. You know, so again, there's no way to describe this other than right on the edge. You know, it could still really go either way. And it looks like it's going to go all the way to the end. The one caveat I said is, again, we're, you know, we kind of always tend to fall into a mindset of what's going on right now is going to continue throughout the rest, but things do change, and that could change in either direction. You could have the anti-Trump folks getting stronger, in which case, you know, we're at a contested convention, or we could have sort of, you know, Trump pulls out one or two more wins. He wins in Wisconsin and maybe in a couple other places after that. And then you get the anti-Trump folks demoralized and losing momentum. And then just Trump wraps it up on all the rest. You know, either one of these things could happen.
Yeah, I know. Well, we're going to find out soon enough, aren't we?
Well, actually, that's one of the things. Not fucking soon enough, because the calendar slows down so damn much.
I know. It's in the next 3 months, I guess. I guess it's not that soon.
Because, you know, we just went through a month where we had, like, you know...
And then I know everything just slowed down to a crawl.
I mean, in March, we had, let's see, on the Republican side, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. We had 22 primaries and caucuses on the Republican side in the month of March. In April, we've got 9. You know, and most of those 9 are on April 26th. So we've got like almost nothing, you know, in the first half of April. So we've got like this pause. I mean, we have North Dakota on April 1st, but it's one of those states that I believe is going to end up mostly electing uncommitted delegates. So you're not really going to find out anything out of North Dakota. Wisconsin is winner take all on April 5th. And you're going to get that. And then we got Colorado on April 8th. But I think that's another one where you're going to get a lot of uncommitted delegates. So North Dakota and Colorado probably won't tell you all that much other than, you know, potentially here's a bunch of other people that, you know, somebody's going to have to go convince to vote for them. And then the next big one's New York on April 19th. And I've heard other people describe, like, on some of these states, like, you know, like, for instance, it is very, very likely, Even if it doesn't end up being uncommitted delegates making the difference, it's very, very likely to go all the way to June 7th when California votes. And California has a whole bunch of delegates, and almost all of them are determined congressional district by congressional district. Okay. And the thing with that is there are a lot of California congressional districts that are all actually very, very liberal. So there are not that many Republicans there.
Right.
And so, like, which Republicans actually show up for, like, the San Francisco congressional district?
Exactly.
Will determine 3 delegates. Who the fuck knows what those handful of Republicans that actually live in the super liberal congressional districts?
Carly Fiorina and two of her drivers.
Yeah, or whatever, you know, and so we've got a lot. Now, there are conservative parts of California as well, of course.
Yes.
But the point is, in both California and New York, you have this kind of thing going on by congressional district, and you've got congressional districts where the population of Republicans is really small, and they end up having an outsized influence on the delegates. And nobody's going to go poll, you know, the 27th congressional district in California specifically to figure out anything. So even when they do polls across the whole state, it's not going to tell you much. Like, California has 169 delegates. 10 of them are determined by the statewide results. All of the rest are by individual congressional district. Winner take all per congressional district.
Well... Oh, man.
So you've got a lot of craziness there.
It's a lot of craziness.
Speaking of craziness, did you see the stuff going on in the Virgin Islands with the Republican delegates there?
No, I didn't hear about this. What happened?
Okay, so I this is once again someplace where I should get up the thing. But basically, And I tweeted about this. If you guys want to go look on Twitter, I tweeted a couple articles.
I thought understanding was that the Virgin Island delegates were all supposed to be unbound.
Yes. Yeah, so kind of, but not quite. Okay. So here's what happened. And there's a lot of interesting things here. Where's the student? Okay.
Virgin Islands declares GOP delegates ineligible.
Yeah, so here's what happened. First of all, before we get to the declaration of these delegates being ineligible. So this is, by the way, a fight over six delegates, okay?
So at this point, six delegates, the way it's looking at, could
might
be
make
important.
A difference. So first of all, there was this guy named Yob from Michigan, okay, who's apparently like... he's involved in Michigan Republican politics, but he decided earlier this year that he was going to take over the Virgin Islands delegate to the convention, the slate of delegates.
Okay.
So what he did is he and his family, quote unquote, moved to the Virgin Islands a few months ago.
Okay.
Apparently, and trying to do it just in time so they would be eligible to do all this stuff. And the Virgin Islands, the entire, like, attendance at the caucuses that determined these six delegates was like a couple hundred people. Okay. And so he basically came in a few months before and started lobbying all kinds of Republican Party people in the Virgin Islands on how wonderful he was and started giving out favors and whatever he needed to do. And so his slate of delegates won. So this was a caucus where everybody votes for individual delegates.
Right.
And the way that it works there is they're all unbound unless they declare a preference before people vote on them, in which case they're bound to whoever they declared a preference for. Okay. And so he and his slate won. His six people that he had picked all ended up winning the votes. And just to I'm looking up the numbers here just to give you an idea what that means, that he is John Yob, and he won the number one delegate slot by getting 131 votes.
Wow.
131 votes total.
Wow.
And I said a few hundred. The total number of votes was actually about 1,600.
Okay.
Okay. But you were voting for this huge slate of people, and whoever came in the top six would win. So him, his wife, and apparently four other people that were on his slate won, with votes ranging from 117 to 131.
Okay. Okay.
Now, there was some controversy already because he had to get an exception because of when he moved there and was it too late, blah, 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 blah. But then what the statement by the party said was that under Rule 11 of the Rules of the Virgin Islands, blah, 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 elected delegates have 5 days to confirm in writing that he or she accepts election and they are willing and able to attend the 2016 Republican National Convention to be held in Cleveland. And then it says, John Yob, Gwen Rabbit, blah, 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 the names of these six people failed to comply with Rule 11. They were all elected as uncommitted delegates. So the alternate delegates, which are, you know, whoever came in 7 through 12, are now the delegates. And that was two for Rubio, one for Cruz, one for Trump, and two more uncommitted delegates. And so because apparently they didn't sign something saying that they accepted their win. Now,
TFB, they didn't do it. That's now, what the rules are for.
Now, apparently, I read something else. Yob is now going to court over this, saying that they were not actually notified that they won officially and with a certified result. And the 5 day calendar shouldn't have started until after that. So this is the reason I'm going into detail on these fucking six delegates is a couple points. One, you can already see shenanigans going on here.
Like, well, yeah, this is definitely a shenanigan from the begin with.
These people moved to the Virgin Islands for the sole purpose of trying to become delegates to the convention.
Right.
Okay. Second, the credentials on who exactly are going to be the six delegates from the Virgin Islands is going to fucking court. There will be disputes about this. This will go on. There will be a credentials committee at the convention that has to decide questions on, like, because if these six show up and the other six show up, somebody at the convention is going to have to decide which ones get let in. Okay. And these six are technically uncommitted, but actually they have some idea of what they want or what they would prefer. Or maybe in this case, I've read conflicting things about if he actually, like, this guy's website, by the way, where is it? It is Chaos Convention or something like that. I'm trying to look it up.
Love it. By the way, I found a page for us to start working up on our credentials.
Oh, there you go. So anyway, this guy, he's gone into this with the specific purpose of trying to make the convention go nuts.
Right. I saw that there is an article on Talking Points Memo about what the heck is going on with the Virgin Islands Republican Party, which I'm going to tweet, okay, which talks about this guy who in the beginning paragraph, it states that when a political consultant from Michigan who has written a book about contested political conventions pops up in the Virgin Islands making a bid to become a delegate to a Republican convention along with his wife and two of their pals, well, it gets your attention. Okay? And it said that apparently John Yob is the owner of a Michigan-based consulting firm, Strategic National, and the former national political director for one-time
Rand Paul.
Republican for Rand Paul. who gained campaign experience working for Paul, John McCain, and Rick Santorum, met headlines last September after he was allegedly punched at a Michigan bar by a Marco Rubio staffer.
Yes.
Okay, this thing, you can't make this shit up.
But look, here's the thing. If we truly get to a scenario where the delegates are going to decide what happens rather than it being a fait accompli, because
it's ridiculously important.
Well, it's ridiculously important, and you're going to see the same kind of thing
with other delegates.
You're going to see all this kind of stuff growing all over the place with all kinds of controversy on, like, you know, one of the things, I mentioned on last week's show, we have a friend who's running to be a cruise delegate in Maryland. He also mentioned to me that none of the other candidates other than Cruz had actually filled out all the paperwork to get a full slate of delegates in Maryland.
That's insane.
So that means that even if Trump won in Maryland, he'd have blank spots.
What?
Anyway, whatever. He would not have. There would be holes in his slate of delegates that would have to be filled, and there would be procedural challenges on how he could do that, given that he hadn't filled out the right paperwork in the right time frame to designate who those people would be. And that's with Maryland being one of the few states where you actually can do that in advance, whereas a lot of these other states, as we've talked about before, the process of selecting delegates is completely independent from the process of determining who those delegates have to vote for on the first round. And so this kind of delegate minutia is the kind of stuff that if we get into the scenario where it really matters, you're going to be hearing about lots of this stuff. Because this is going to be, Virgin Islands is not the only place that's going to be messed up. There are going to be lots of places.
Yeah, because there's a lot of states with similar kind of shit going on. I mean, you know, I just saw North Dakota. The delegates are unbound. There's a whole bunch of places like this where it's the same shit.
Well, and it's not, like I said, it's not even just the unbound delegations. The unbound has potential for all kinds of chaos, even on the first round. Like I said, like we talked about last week, like you can bribe these people, you can do whatever you want to try to get their vote. But there's just all kinds of places where the process that leads to actual human beings filling these slots, even in the states that have already voted, that process is still underway in all but a few states. There's all kinds of places where that can go wrong, where, you know, the experienced campaigns like Cruz are doing a good job and have that quote unquote ground game and are filing the paperwork and doing all the things, but maybe Trump isn't.
And right, and that's the, and you know what, that hits the part where I keep reading about, and you posted a couple of these articles on Twitter, how, yeah, Trump has this campaign that is a great publicity juggernaut, but when it comes to the nuts and bolts of a whole bunch of this shit, he's got nobody that really is handling this shit, okay? And you know, I think that's in part why he's making these like threats. You know, I think he's almost like counting on the fact that he may, you know, to use muscle in order to just muscle himself in. And but the question is that if you look at some of these people, I don't think these people are going to be muscled by this show. Yeah. I mean,
well, yeah, I mean, and but this is exactly the kind of thing where if somebody other than Trump wins by taking advantage of esoteric delegate rules, that's when the Trump people are going to blow their lids, and you know we're going to see with all the anger that's built up in the Trump people,
I think it's going to be chaos either way.
Yeah,
it looks like we're heading to chaos.
It does look like we're heading to chaos. We don't even need a contested convention to go to chaos.
Yeah,
because if it looks like Trump is winning outright, you may get some of the anti-Trump folks just saying, "Screw it, we're not going."
Because you don't need that many of them. That's the problem. Even if at the rate that he's going. Even if he gets the majority may not be, you know, strong enough that because of the people we're talking about, that they may just say, fuck this. We don't care. The hell with it.
Well, yeah. And there was one article that was posted recently where basically someone said, you know, this is going to be bad no matter what. You know, so pick your side. You know, if Trump wins, the Republican Party is going to tear itself apart in one way. If Trump loses, it's going to tear itself apart in another way.
Right.
And either way, this is going to be messy. This is going to be bad. This is, you know.
As long as nobody gets hurt or killed, I'm all for chaos.
Well, and, you know, at this point, I wouldn't take odds on that. I kind of expect somebody to get hurt or killed before this is
over. Well, I don't. Well, I said, I'm all for it as long as somebody. I mean, if we're going to get to that extent, then no.
But one thing I did want to mention while we were talking about delegates, it's actually a couple weeks old, but there were a few articles you may have seen. Trump actually looks like Trump lost two delegates in Illinois that he would have otherwise won.
Because
in Illinois, you actually individually vote for the delegates. They state their preference, but you vote for the delegates by name, just like we were talking about in the Virgin Islands. So there were delegates that had, you know, themselves listed as Trump supporters, but they had foreign sounding names.
What?
And so a few people have done like a mathematical analysis of the Trump slate of delegates. And because most people went down the line going, okay, I'm going to vote for all the Trump delegates. Boom, 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 boom. But miraculously, there were two Trump delegates that got a lot less votes than all of the other Trump delegates. And they were the two with Middle Eastern sounding names.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's really great. It's fantastic.
And they were Trump supporters. They liked him. But his supporters didn't like them.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That's what you get for being a Trump supporter. Fuck. Rods.
Oh, my. Okay. I think we've gone on long enough about this. Bottom line is we still don't know jack shit about exactly what's going to happen. It looks like there are all sorts of situations that could result in total chaos that are still out there, even if Trump has a majority of the delegates before the end of June, there are still chaos situations potential.
Yeah.
So it just looks very messy. And if he doesn't have a majority, it just gets worse.
Right.
You know, so, oh, fun stuff.
And if you want my pitch on what's going on with the Democrats, I retweeted today an image by somebody called Chris McGarian, who took a picture of a guy with a little sign that says, "Feel the math."
Yes. Feel the math.
Yes. Poor Bernie. That's,
poor Bernie.
It's that a Clinton supportee in Seattle thinks it's time for Sanders to face reality on the delegate math. And that was his little sign. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So for all of the details, check out electiongraphs.com. And about halfway, there's, if you scroll down a little bit, you'll see links to all of the analysis posts. Click through and read them, too, for the Democrats, for the Republicans, and for the Electoral College in general. Which, by the way, the one thing I'll mention on Electoral College is my latest update. Trump's expected case versus Clinton hits a new all-time low since we've been tracking it. Basically, the more polls there are, the worse it looks for Trump at the moment. But we'll see. There's still more time to go. There's all kinds of stuff going on. It's still within the realm of possibility that he would win, but the recent polls have not been looking good for him. Let's just say.
Yeah.
Which, you know. So we may yet. Yeah, it may well yet be the Clinton blowout that people expect in that matchup. So far, it still looks closer than a blowout, although Clinton's been ahead in that matchup all the
time. I don't know. I mean, that margin is, and some people are showing, at this point, between if you took the Democratic frontrunner versus the Republican frontrunner.
This is the biggest margin in many elections.
Yes.
Yeah. No, yes. I mean, look, let's be absolutely clear here. My simulations, my model on electiongraphs.com.
It's a simulation.
It's more a model. But anyway, the has consistently showed Clinton ahead from the very beginning. It has just shown that there are enough close states that if Trump ran the table on all the close states, he could still win. But Clinton's been ahead the whole time in all of it. And there's still lots of states.
One of these scenarios with this run the table thing for, I don't know, this is like the third election. Shit never happens.
Well, no. And look, a couple of elections, it was far enough away that wasn't even the case. But like, look, it's what I present as my bubble is the range of like, this could conceivably happen. The reality is the closer you are to the center line where I have the expected case, the more likely it is.
Correct.
The outer edges of that bubble are actually fairly unlikely, but still possible. If everything went the way for, you know, whichever candidate you're looking at that edge. Here's what I wanted to say real quick on margins. There have not been enough polls in sort of the stronger states to really say anything yet, but there's been teases. Like there have been polls in Arizona, for instance, showing that. Where'd I click? Where'd it go? Anyway.
what did they show? Anyway, since you can't find it, but.
No. There have only been two polls so far. Of Arizona, of Clinton versus Trump.
Right.
But they both show it close. The most recent one actually has a tie. This is Arizona, which has been a fairly red state for a long time. But even more telling is Utah. There have only been two polls in Utah. But the most recent poll in Utah that came out this week because of the primaries going on there actually shows Clinton beating Trump in Utah.
Which is insane. I mean, you know,
just to give you an idea, in 2012, Romney beat Obama by 48% in Utah.
Exactly. I mean, how crazy is that?
Now, yeah. So look, there's tentative signs that even some deep red states have weakness for Trump.
Let me put it to you this way. Look at how badly Trump got crushed. In Utah. I mean that,
well,
that
number you got to be careful there because the primary results you can't read a lot about general election results into primary results.
No, I get that, but still, look, I get that. But,
what people have been hypothesizing specifically about Utah and a couple of these other states are basically there have been some correlations that various people have done specifically on Mormon public opinion. And of course, there are a lot of Mormons in Utah, basically saying that even though as a group, you know, there are a lot of Mormon Democrats as well, but Mormons tend to be more conservative, more Republican, but they're very, the kind of conservative they are doesn't like Donald Trump. You know,
no, because they don't like Donald Trump. Well, it's part because he's been attacking.
It's like the good family values, wholesome, blah, blah, blah. And there are many words that can be described. You can describe Donald Trump with, but family values and wholesome aren't there.
No, none of them. No,
you
know, no.
You don't look at Donald Trump and say, oh, that's a nice young man.
No.
Not that he's young, he's old, but well, you know what I mean.
That's a nice, yeah, that's a, look at that nice man.
There are stereotypes involved in this, and I don't want to go stereotyping Mormons either, but like there are some polling stuff that basically show the larger the percentage of Mormons in a county, the lower the Donald Trump support is. And there's a very fairly strong correlation there. But again, you can't take Republican primary results and graft them onto the general election. It doesn't necessarily apply.
I completely agree, but I just think that in general, I wouldn't use that, but I'm like, but Jesus, I mean, the drubbing percentage he got in Utah, that was like, I looked the number, I'm like, I did a double take, I'm like, oh, come on, really? That bad?
Right.
Well, that bad?
Well, and like I said, I'm less worried about the primary results, but the fact that, you know, the most recent poll in Utah actually has Clinton ahead is like, oh my God, that can't possibly be. But the one earlier poll that was done had Trump ahead, but only by 9%. And that was last summer before everything happened.
Right.
You know, so I am eager to get more polling in traditionally red states, because almost all the general election polling has been on traditionally close states. And what you have specifically on Clinton versus Trump right now is there are 8 quote unquote close states. 7 of them are on the Clinton side of the fence right now. And the one that's still on the Trump effect side has only had one poll and it was old.
Right.
You know, so I suspect that, you know, as we get more polling, Trump will look even weaker than he does today.
Yeah.
Anyway, I went on an extra 10 minutes after we said that we were going to stop the segment.
We got problems with our timing. Really?
We'll take a break. We'll be back. And what was next on the agenda? Brussels.
Brussels.
We'll talk about Brussels after
Brussels sprouts.
Not sprouts. Unfortunately, oh, no. That would be a more fun topic.
Yes.
Back after this. Do you want to understand what is really going on with the presidential election cycle? Then go to electiongraphs.com right away. There you'll find charts and graphs covering the nomination processes in both parties and the general election race for Electoral College votes. For the delegate races, we track not just delegate totals, but also the ever-important analysis of how each candidate has to do with the remaining delegates in order to actually win. For the Electoral College, we track state-by-state poll averages to categorize which states are actually in play and which are not, in order to show you the range of likely electoral results and how that changes over time. Sure, you can get some of this stuff elsewhere, but not in exactly the same way, and not from me, Sam, your prime curmudgeon. I think my election trackers are better than the rest, so come look at mine, electiongraphs.com. Okay, we are back.
All right, so we're going to talk about the terror attack in Brussels. And can I make just one comment right away?
Sure.
Okay, so the terrorists were Belgians.
Are they now?
Belgians.
Wait, they're not from Syria?
No.
Iraq, maybe.
No.
They
were native-born Belgians.
I see. Is there a point you're trying to make with that?
just that we had a whole bunch of idiots talk a lot about the terror attack and how we're going to ban all these people from all these countries and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, great. So what are you going to do? You're going to rip the citizenship away from certain people because they're born because they like a religion in your country? Is that what we're planning on doing?
A lot of people would go there. You know, and that's part of what's scary here.
You know, almost every country in the world, the United States included, where we live, has a lot of homegrown terrorists. We've had a history of it for a very long time. It happens all over the place. I think we're in an era where, like right now, one of the things that happens is that before it was more difficult to be halfway across the world and be able to incite other people based on your rhetoric. The internet, communication, and the way it is right now makes it a lot easier for groups of people to collaborate and work on a lot of things, but it also makes it easier to incite these kinds of things to people that have common beliefs around the world. And unfortunately, you know, we can do what we can do to try to keep people safe, but, you know, you're never going to be able to stop everything. And
well, and look, I don't know if you did watch the news.
I'm hoping to did saw the big terror attacks that happened in Belgium this week. It seems to be a group of terrorists that were related to the Paris attacks that happened months back. And what it seems to be is that this all got precipitated because one of the key people in that group got arrested a couple of days ago, and it seemed like the other people in his team, I guess, thought that if they didn't do whatever they were planning on doing right away, they were all going to get caught.
Right.
It just seems like.
Well, because they also put out reports that the guy was talking.
They put out reports that the guy was talking, yes. And so I guess they decided that, you know, they had to do whatever they were going to do. And so they did it right away. You know. It's just, you know, people are writing and saying that Obama is like, go out in Cuba while the world's on fire. Give me a fucking break. This shit has been happening. I mean.
And of course, the usual folks always pointed out that, you know, Brussels got all the attention, but if you look at the 1 month before Brussels, there were similarly sized or larger attacks in about 5 or 6 countries across the world.
Yes.
You know, and, you know, there are news reports about them, but they don't get the wall-to-wall coverage. You don't get cable news going crazy about them because, you know, it's Turkey or it's Sierra Leone or it's Pakistan. Right. And so, whatever, you know.
Who cares, right? Yeah. I just think it's part of, I don't mean to minimize it and just say, I mean, I'm not concerned by it, but it's also unfortunately part of what it seems like is a little bit of a change in our normal, because I'm not going to say that it's a new normal totally, because like I said, if you look at our history in the last, I don't know, whatever, in the decades in the 90s and the 80s and the 70s and the 60s. I mean, think about Munich, for example. And
Munich. We had the IRA. There were airplane hijackings fairly regularly.
Loro, the airplane hijackings. I mean, come on. Give me a break. Paris bombings, London bombings. Lockerbie, come on, people. This is not like it's the first damn time, and everybody keeps acting like all of a sudden this is happening.
Now, I have seen a couple charts that show that if you look at global terrorism, so including all of those places that we don't usually talk about all the time, there has been an upward trend since 9/11. There was like a lull for a little while after 9/11, and then it's been ramping up ever since. And so we do have larger numbers of these kinds of attacks worldwide than we have had in a while. But still, if you compare it to everything else, it's still relatively small.
I'm not going to destroy everybody's civil liberties and you know, stigmatize entire groups of people over this. No.
Well, but yeah, but unfortunately you're not going to, but that's what everybody wants to do. Everybody is, you already see people responding to this by saying we need even more surveillance, and we need, this is exactly why we need to get backdoors into encryption. And this is why this, and this is why this, and we have to tighten security even further. And you have goddamn Ted Cruz calling surveillance of Muslim neighborhoods. And all this kind of stuff. So it's, you know, yeah, like I don't want that either. I think it's a massive overreaction. I don't think we need to go there, but you get everybody afraid and people take advantage of it. And that's where you go. You end up with all of these excesses.
So let me give you an example. I'll give you some numbers. I pulled up a chart. I don't have like for last year, but in 2013, okay. There were 21 people killed in the U.S. by terrorist attacks in the U.S. Mm-hmm. 21. While at the same time, we had 33,636 people killed by other gun violence.
Yeah.
Okay? 33,000! Jesus, people. I mean, you know what? We won't touch the Second Amendment, okay? All right? And like, or like even consider like gun limitations, but fuck, over like maybe 100 people killed a year, we're gonna take an entire group of people and treat them like scum on the earth and throw them in jail and surveil them and do all of this fucking shit they're talking about.
Do you help me? What?
I'm still recording. Anyway, yeah, no.
Alex? It's just outrageous.
Hold on. Alex, I'm not done yet. You gotta... Alex?
This is Sam here with an opportunity for you. Yes, you heard me right, an opportunity. For you loyal listeners of Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, every once in a while, Yvonne can't make a show. And I do a solo show, which, you know, I think I do okay. But, you know, it's always interesting to have a second person to bounce off. And just in general, sometimes it's good to hear another voice. If you, yes, you, have some things to say about the kinds of things we usually talk about on Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, politics, current events, news, tech, then drop me a line at abelsmay@abelsmay.com letting me know. And hey, I'll keep you in mind and maybe ask if you can join us sometime, either on a regular show with Yvonne if it's something particularly pressing that you maybe have an expertise on, or just, you know, hey, an opportunity to co-host when Yvonne is out. Who knows? Now, I am not guaranteeing that if you send me an email, you will definitely get on the show, but let me know if you're interested, and I'll keep you in mind. Thanks, and now, back to the show.
Okay, I'm back. sorry for the interruptions. Anyway, no, look, you're the thing is, people are always overreacting to these things, and I understand, like, you're afraid, you don't want this to happen, blah blah blah, but your point is absolutely right. Forget about, you know, what particularly you want to do about gun violence and what solution you want to apply, but the just relative comparison of the problems. You know, the response that we give to things should be proportionate to the size of damage that they occur.
Exactly.
And so we should be paying a lot more attention to whatever you said, 33,000 people in one situation, or how, or you even expand it beyond domestic, beyond guns, like, you know, the murder rate, you know, or cancer or anything else, compared to this tiny number over here that are affected by international terrorism or domestic terrorism. Our responses should be proportionate. We shouldn't be like, you know, completely overturning basic principles of our society to fight this relatively small danger. Now, of course, the argument is if you don't fight it, the danger gets bigger. But, you know, come on, let's
And I'm not saying not to fight it, but at the same time, like what I'm saying is...
But be proportionate. And also, look,
yes.
Look, also, one of the things here is, this is exactly something we've talked about before. Where did they attack in this case? They attacked in the line before you go to security at an airport.
Right.
And at a subway stop. And no matter where you put the line, there's always a right outside the line. And, you know, I remember talking on this show about, like, oh, they're beefing up security at the airports. Well, duh, like, somebody's going to blow up the damn security line, you know, before you get checked for anything, you know? And, I mean, it wasn't quite the security line that got blown up, but same idea. And you can't make the security encompass everything. And the effects of...
Well, security's never going to be perfect.
Hold on one more time.
Alex, for me? Thank you.
Okay, I was getting all upset with him again, but he brought me an orange soda. We were talking about those earlier.
There you go.
It was a peace offering, I guess.
Okay.
The other thing, just a sort of a side note here, these were suicide bombers again. I guess two out of the three bombs were suicide bombs. And I keep going back to, like, really? You can't figure out how to use a remote control? Is it really
necessary? I think they meant to commit suicide.
I know they meant to kill themselves, but it seems like, you know, and I
know they couldn't get taught the basics of, like, operating a remote little button
or a timer or whatever, you know. Look,
they wanted to get laid, according to the fucking religion, apparently they're gonna get laid from virgins, like, later, so I guess they would, you know.
I know there's a whole thing that it's noble to die and as part of the cause, but it seems like, so just from a purely practical point of view, it seems inefficient.
Look at the Japanese and the kamikaze attacks. That strategy didn't work very well. They wound up losing all their best pilots, and they wound up losing the war faster.
I mean,
it doesn't work.
And the justification is, I guess, you can make sure that the bomb goes off and target it better and things like that.
Whatever.
But I mean, look, the Boston bombing showed you can put something down and walk away.
Oh, hell yeah.
You know, I mean, it's not like, you know, even with all the warnings about, like, you know, report like unattended bags and all that kind of stuff, it's not like somebody's going to deal with it in 30 seconds.
If you're going to fucking be a bomber, you want to commit suicide on time. I'm okay with that. I'm like, look, I don't even have to debate about the death penalty on you. You fucking, like, gave it to yourself.
Yeah, yeah. It just seems like...
I agree. Listen, the whole damn thing is insane.
Not like I want to be going here and talking about the most practical ways to blow people up. Like, that's not my intention here at all. I'm just like, it just seems stupid to do it this way.
I get it, but listen, the whole thing is stupid. I mean, what are these people... You know, they're going out there, great. So you're trying to get publicity, beautiful. Is that all? I mean, you decide to, like, take out a group of innocent people you never met and fucking kill them just to get publicity for your cause?
Well,
and, like,
cause
an insane, intense amount of pain and anguish to a whole bunch of fucking people.
Well, specifically in the case of, and by the way, if for those of you who hadn't seen it, Islamic State specifically took responsibility for this bombing. But if you look at some of their printed documents about what their strategy is, like, this isn't even speculation, this is them outright saying it. They say that many of their tactics are designed to try to provoke the West into clamping down in such ways that make it so that it's untenable for Muslims to live in the West, and they basically have to make the choice to join IS because they're no longer welcome in the West.
Right. And then you've got the morons, Teddy and Trump and all those idiots basically doing exactly what the fuck they want. Genius.
Yeah. I mean, and again, it is not even an argument here about, well, that's not really what they want.
Oh, yes, that is what they want. Those assholes, that is what they want. Yes. Yes.
Ugh. And so by the way, I expect to see like more, all of the tightening that we always see after these events. You're going to see security tightened up. You're going to see pushes for more surveillance. You've already seen it in a few days. And, you know, some of it's temporary, but every time something happens, it's used as an excuse to ratchet things up further. And in the end, I think the only ones we're hurting with that kind of stuff are us. It's not giving any real additional security. It's just, you know, it makes people feel a little bit safer, maybe, because they see some of this stuff going on and they're like, ooh, okay, they're doing that. Yay. That's why they call it security theater. Like all the stupid stuff at the airports, you know, it, maybe some of it has some value, but most of it is just for show. And okay, maybe it makes people feel a little bit better, but you're adding so much cost without very much, if any. I mean, there's some arguments that incrementally it actually hurts overall security by doing all this stuff. And so it's counterproductive. I mean, it hurts us to react in these ways. The analogy I always use is an allergic reaction. It's where, you know, like an allergy normally is your body's immune system tries to defend against something that it thinks is a threat, but overreacts, and the stuff your immune system does ends up hurting you more than whatever it was that was reacting to by causing severe allergic reactions. And that's what all of this stuff is. I mean, all of the effects of these terrorist attacks over the last few years are just that kind of allergic reaction. And going back for a second to the Clinton versus Trump thing, you know, this is one of the scenarios that could tip that. Like, if people are scared, they like a Trump kind of person who doesn't say it's complex and we have to think about it. And all he does is pound his table and says, we're going to kill those assholes.
Right. And their families.
And their families.
And we're going to torture them.
And we're going to torture them.
Yep.
You notice recently, it's not just Trump isn't claiming that waterboarding isn't torture. He explicitly said in response to the Belgian stuff, we need to torture them more.
Right.
He used the word.
We need to torture them more.
Like,
right.
At least the Bush administration had this little facade of pretending they weren't torturing.
No. He wants them to be tortured. Yes. He wants our military to commit acts of torture. You know, this guy is a disgusting pig. I can't stand it. Go on.
And by the way, just to be clear, I mean, Trump is awful in all the ways we always talk about it. Like, it's not like Cruz is all that much better.
No, he's not better. Two assholes.
You know, Cruz is just bad in different ways.
Right.
Like, you know, what's her name? Lindsey Graham, who has now supported Cruz,
his warm endorsement.
Well, but just a few weeks ago, he was talking about how choosing between Trump and Cruz was choosing between getting shot and getting poisoned.
I know.
But
son of a bitch went and endorsed Cruz. I mean, the only reason I can think that he endorsed Cruz is because he just wants a contested convention. And so then Jeb today fucking endorsed Cruz. And I'm like, really? You endorse Cruz? You hate this man.
Well,
you hate his positions.
Yes.
And you endorse them.
They all think it's the best way to get to a convention, contested convention.
I guess. At this point. Fuck.
Anyway, we've got off kilter. Anything else to say about Belgium? I mean, Brussels, I mean, other than, it's Belgium. Sad. I did see there was one thing where one guy that was there was also at the Boston bombing.
Jesus,
one of the survivors.
Christ, that guy is like really has a lot of bad luck.
Yeah. Okay. And
well, let's just make sure that we don't go on a trip with that guy. Okay.
There you go. And
all right. Good.
And by the way, it is only a matter of time till one of these happens in this country. You know, there's.
What do you mean? It has.
No, I know. I mean, again.
Oh.
Or one of.
Like, what are you talking about? We just had it like a month or two ago.
We were just talking about Boston. Well, and the
we had San Bernardino. We
San
had
Bernardino
Boston.
Was a bit smaller, but yeah, it's only a matter of time till there's another big one. in the U.S. And, you know, and
well, we've had Boston. We've had San Bernardino. I mean, geez, I'm like, come on. It's like, I mean. I know. Oh, by the way, we've had a whole bunch of other gun massacres along the way.
I know, but look, but can you imagine, like, take what just happened in Brussels. Imagine that happening in New York, D.C., or Chicago in the October listen, before the election.
Listen, look what happened in Boston when it was that. They locked down the whole city. Remember how we were talking about that? Yeah, I know. I get it. It's happened. And we go nuts over it. Yeah.
Okay, let's take a break. We will come back. We're getting really long here, but I think we have one thing left, really. We'll be back after this, and we'll talk briefly about Apple stuff. And then, I don't know, there are a couple minor things, maybe lightning round, but maybe we'll just save that to next time. I think we should save that to next time.
Okay.
I don't know. Oh. We'll see. Anyway, back after this.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
Okay, here we are. So, Apple.
Well,
did you order your small iPhone? I guess you can't pre-order yet for like next week or something. But are you going to?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Now,
so basically, all the announcements were just about exactly as people
everything
expected.
That was pre-announced. So it's not really a surprise. We even talked about them before they happened. So there's nothing as a surprise.
And you know, and I realize some of the reasons. Because of the size of the supply chain and everything else, why all this stuff works out?
But I also think I think Tim Cook is doing this on purpose, to a certain extent. Steve was fanatic about security. I mean, he was basically like a terror. I mean, he had a reign of terror about security, and Tim just. Look, Tim's just not Steve.
Yeah, he doesn't care as much. But, you know, I miss it to some degree. But
I get it. But at the same time, it took so much to keep that secrecy that I guess Tim just thinks it's not worth it anymore.
Yeah, and also there's a difference, too, between, like, you're announcing the iPhone for the first time versus you're announcing the smaller iPhone that's just like the other iPhones. It's just a little smaller.
It's just not worth it to if it was something I think more groundbreaking, I would think that he probably would maybe do like something like that.
I mean, we don't have to speculate. I mean, the watch was a little bit more like, everybody knew a watch was coming, but you know, there were some elements that were new when they announced it the first time, kind of, sort of, you know,
right.
They did a little bit better job keeping that under wraps because it was a brand new thing, you know, whereas a new iPhone isn't, a new iPad isn't. It's just like, here you go.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, it's like, you know, I remember like being really excited about, oh my God, there's an Apple event. I have to watch the Apple event, blah, blah, blah. This time I had it on in the background, but I was like, eh, whatever.
But I
Apple
think event. Because it's just that we had heard most of the stuff in advance.
But yeah, but the point is we always do at this point.
Yeah, I know. Well, look, I think.
And for years now, it's all been incremental stuff. There has, you know, now, and I'm not saying, you know, Apple has to put out a new, like, world changing product every year. But at the same time, it's like, okay, new iPhone.
I know.
You know, new iPad. Oh, okay, whatever.
I'm sure something will happen next couple of years to get us excited. But, you know, like I said before, nobody's launching anything that's like, we're like, woo-hoo-hoo, look at that. Look, Samsung launched a few weeks back their new whatever fucking phone it's called. Whatever the hell it's called.
I don't know.
Did we even care?
No.
No.
Well, it used to be like when there were major new flagships on the Android side, even though I'm not an Android person, I would pay attention to them.
But nobody cared. You know, nobody cared. Yeah. So, I mean, it's, you know, even a new version, you know, Android launches the new version of their OS. It's called Patty Cake or whatever the hell they call them. They come up with these names. I'm like, every time I'm like, Lollipop, Putty, Patty Cake, whatever the hell they're called. And you're like, what does any of this mean? And I'm like, you don't really know. And then they were talking about the other day that the announcement is like, yes, the latest version of Android has been installed on 2% of their devices.
So to be specific, the Android version names in terms of those code names were Cupcake, Donut, Eclair, Froyo, Gingerbread, Honeycomb, Ice Cream Sandwich, Jelly Bean, Kit Kat, Lollipop, and Marshmallow. And the next one is going to be something that starts with an N, but it hasn't been announced yet. Hey, look,
what can I say to that?
Okay, but Cheetah, Mountain Lion, El Capitan. I mean, look, whatever, you know.
I know, I get it. I mean, you know, it's just, yeah, I know.
Leopard, iOS, not iOS, macOS Leopard. You know, look, they had big cats and now they have things in California. And so Android has food, whatever.
Yeah, food. Know. They got food. I don't know. It's like, you know, I mean, it's just, I don't know. Anyway, yeah, doesn't say anything to anybody. And I will say on
would
app,
would you prefer that they just say, you know, version 5.1.1?
Yes, that would probably be nice. Yes.
Yeah, that's boring. I like the names.
I don't know. The names just confuse the shit out of me because I don't know which was before or after.
Well, that's because you're not an Android guy. Like you knew the order of the Mac OS names.
Take 10 people who own an Android phone and ask them to tell you which one of those. Take 3 of those and say which one is first and which one is later. They will probably fuck up that answer 10 out of 10.
Well, if you just pick some random person, but if you pick like some of the people who are actually techies who care about that, they'll know.
But listen, if you...
You know El Capitan is after Yosemite, is after Mavericks.
Actually,
is,
you know what? Can I just say...
You don't know anymore.
I didn't remember that anymore either.
I had to look it up.
Exactly my point.
By the way, that's Kodiak, Cheetah, Puma, Jaguar, Panther, Tiger, Leopard, Snow Leopard, Lion, Mountain Lion, Mavericks, Yosemite, El Capitan. But I
and I'm like, okay, but if you tell me iOS 6, 7, 8, or 9, shit, I know 8 came before 9, right?
Do you now? Are you sure?
Yes, I'm pretty damn sure.
Okay, anyway, enough about Apple announcements because they were fairly underwhelming.
Right.
Other than, you know, you get your phone that fits your tiny little hands.
Yes.
your Trump-sized phone, as they say.
Yes. Well, how about the fact that apparently the FBI finally found somebody that could unlock the phone?
Yeah, so they basically asked for a delay in the proceedings. Like, there was about to be a sort of an evidentiary hearing or something where they had to give testimony. I don't know the details. But anyway, they asked for a delay in that because they think they might have found a way to get into the phone without Apple's help. And it's apparently some Israeli company that does phone forensics or whatever. And they've undoubtedly found some flaw that they can get into on the old phones. Who knows if it applies to the new phones.
Exactly. I think what I heard from most people was that there were some flaws that could probably... I mean, could have been exploited on the old phone that they hadn't made as easily exploitable on new phones.
Right.
That was my understanding. Now, I guess it takes a whole bunch of people with a lot of skill and patience to be able to do that. But I think on the principle, like we said before, to force Apple to have to write software to make a flaw on their phone just seemed crazy.
Well, it just shows, I mean, I don't know. Either the FBI wasn't doing due diligence and they were just sort of incompetent about it, or, as most people think, it was never really about getting into the damn phone. It was about getting the precedent made. They started to back out here when it looked like things might not be going their way.
I think that that's what it was. I do. So I think that they were concerned about the fact that they couldn't get the cooperation they were looking for, and they decided to try to use this as a case, to try to do that. And, it kind of backfired. I mean, because they knew that they were on shaky ground on this thing overall. So they wanted to try to see if they could use this to solidify it. And it didn't turn out the way they thought it would.
Okay. I think that's all I got on Apple. Since we did that really quickly, let's do a quick lightning round.
Yeah. Thing about the lightning round, I'll mention this first. Okay, so I don't know. 2 weeks ago, I said I went to Mexico City.
Oh, yeah.
And
you heard from all of the people how much they love Trump and are hoping for him to win.
Oh, yeah, of course. They were they were very loving of him. Yeah.
Okay, what was your real point?
I came up – so when I got there, I realized – especially compared to like 10 years ago, not that much, 6 years ago, last time I went there, I said, shit, the traffic's bad. I mean, this is like terrible. Everybody was driving around using Waze. Everybody. Right. I got in a car, they were using Waze in Mexico City. They just would not drive around the damn car unless they were using Waze. Yep. And I'm like, Jesus. I mean, this is crazy. But then I just, something on Twitter came about talking about how bad Miami traffic was, and it pulled up a list of the worst traffic cities in the world, ranked. Mm-hmm. Number one?
Mexico City. Yeah.
Yes, by a lot. I was like, well, I guess I wasn't wrong about the traffic being awful.
Oh, and for instance, I'll tell you, I work from home today. I did not go into the office today. It was planned anyway. However, I was looking at Twitter reports in the morning how my normal commute, which I've mentioned before, is it's about 35 minutes when there's no traffic at all. But normal rush hour traffic, we're probably talking about an hour. Today, there were some things going on, and it was running over 2 hours.
Ooh.
In the route I normally go.
Oh, that would have been brutal.
That's
true, by the way, that your town, Seattle, has worse traffic than Miami.
Yeah. So the Twitter reports were saying, okay, it's like running 140 minutes from Everett to Seattle, blah, 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 whatever it was. And so they were saying, you might want to consider working from home or taking your secret route or whatever. And so I popped up Waze and said, okay, if I was going to go to work right now, and thank goodness I'm not, but if I was going to, what would you do? And it routed around all the traffic, and I noticed it hopped off the highway and went back roads for about half the way before hopping back on the highway right before getting into Seattle. And it cut so Waze was saying about 55 minutes when the Twitter stuff was saying about 2 hours. And because it's very real time adaptive to traffic, and I swear that thing has saved me so much time. Like normally it's like, okay, straight shot down Interstate 5, but I will never drive without that thing on because it'll know if there's an accident 5 miles ahead or 2 miles ahead or whatever to get the hell off the highway and go some other way instead, because today it's better, even though it's usually not.
Right. Right. So you use Waze much as you can.
I did, and people who've been listening for a few years remember I went through a few sessions where I did testing where I had 8 different navigation apps on my phone, and I would sort of rotate between them. I would randomly select between them, blah blah blah, and I gradually narrowed it down. And I've done this process at least twice now, maybe 3 times. And each of the last few times I've done it, I've always ended up with Waze as like that ends up being the one that I want up. And that's the one I want to be using. There are a couple others that are okay, but like I always found myself whenever I was using one of the others and I started to get into a traffic situation, I'm like, oh shit, what does Waze say? And so at this point, Waze is the only one I have on my phone. Well, except for like the Apple Maps that's built in and stuff. But I'll use those things for maps, but not for navigation.
Not for navigation.
My car. I mean, you know, they might be good for other things, but not for that.
Okay.
Anyway, that would have been a good lightning round item. But let's take a break and let's do a quick lightning round. Back after this.
You're in the Valley, AM 1620 and LiganairRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs. Everybody's doing a brand new dance now. Come on, baby. Let's do
the twist. Well, they got a new dance and it goes like this.
Classic music for a classic American town, AM 1620, and in stereo at LiganairRadio.com, The Valley.
Okay, so there, before I, you know, one, I'll just throw out, I did finish another TV series. I finished, you know, I mentioned a couple months ago, I watched the movie Minority Report.
Oh my God, really? That thing came out like...
No, we
10 years ago.
We talked about that a couple months ago where I watched the movie Minority Report, and we actually talked on the show about how it was 10 years ago and how you actually liked the movie and blah, blah, blah. And I had watched it back then, but I watched it again recently, like a few months ago. But because I watched that movie, I followed it up with the Minority Report TV series.
There was a TV series?
In 2015, so just last year.
Us?
And it lasted 10 episodes before it was canceled.
Yeah, I think.
And people gave it relatively bad reviews overall. I actually kind of liked it. I'm kind of sad that there were only 10 episodes. I guess it officially, like, it was originally contracted for 13 episodes, and then they cut it to 10. And I guess, which implies cancellation, but they didn't actually say there won't be a season 2, but I'm assuming there won't be. But because it had horrible ratings and stuff, too. But, I liked it. It basically took, you know, for those of you who don't remember, the premise of the Minority Report movie was that there were these three, what they called precogs, who would see murders in advance before they happened. And it involved this cop and who was played by Tom Cruise and blah, blah, blah. They had an adventure. At the end of that movie, they shut down the precog program because of various problems it had and sent the precogs off into seclusion somewhere. So this picks up the story like 10 years later or something, when one of those precogs decides he doesn't want to be in isolation on some island anymore, and he's going to go back into the city because he's tired of seeing murders and he can't do anything about them. So he teams up with a cop and works with them and solves crimes and stuff.
Okay, so...
I actually kind of, like I said, I actually kind of liked it.
Sounds good, except, you know, the movie came out, I looked up, I can't remember what year, 2002.
Yeah.
I mean, 13 years later, you decide to do the TV show. I'm going to say that interest in that shit had already been at nothing.
No? Yeah?
It's just not a great idea. Seriously.
Anyway, I thought it was a fun show. I wish it had lasted more than 10 episodes.
Yeah, but they apparently they ordered 13, and apparently it was doing so shitty they said, "Fuck it, we're only going to do 10. Let's just cut our losses."
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
but they did, and this is one thing that I like. They did give them enough notice so they could actually wrap up the show. Because one of the things I absolutely hate is
like when they cut the Kando series in the middle, you don't even know, you know, there's no like logical conclusion to
it. Yeah, it is just like and there are all kinds of loose ends and they just cut it. No, this they gave them enough warning. So they wrapped up the storylines. They finished it up. It's more important these days because it used to be like 20, 30 years ago. Like most shows were like standalone episodes where you could watch any episode out of order. It didn't really matter. There were some shows where that wasn't true, but most shows you could just pick them up. It didn't really matter. There wasn't a continuing story. But now that's reversed. Most shows actually do have continuing ongoing plot lines between episodes. And so it kind of matters. And so I thank Fox for actually giving him enough notice so they could wrap up the damn story instead of just dropping it in the middle, which would have sucked.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. That was my first thing. And now to real things. Obama went to Cuba.
Yes.
What do you think?
Well, I think it was about what expected. I will say that people down here weren't that really happy about it. In South Florida.
Oh yeah, the Miami Cuban community. Is this a generational thing though? Or is it?
I will say that definitely the feelings were far stronger for those who were like exiled from when these guys were in power. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I will say that it's definitely it, but I think that even to the younger generation, the Cubans, is the fact that, look, I mean, they're still the same damn dictators that really imprisoned and even imprisoned people now, you know?
Well, and as they pointed out, like, they apparently rounded up a whole bunch of people while Obama was on the plane heading over.
Well, hell, there was ESPN was broadcasting something in the game yesterday, and there was like a protest like broke out, and right on the shot on TV, you know, the police came out and freaking arrested all these people. You know, so yeah, I think that a lot of people just, you know, they see that, but I think that, look, I think it brings a lot more visibility to that plight, and it's definitely embargo wasn't really working. I think despite the ill feelings that some people had about ending this, if you look at history, I think that this kind of opening is the best way to make some actual real change happen. Oh, yeah.
And that's the argument. Like we've been isolating them for however many decades.
It hasn't worked. I mean, if you use the isolation as their stick to show them how we're assholes that are making their life miserable, fine, take that away, and then what do you got?
Whereas, meanwhile, you start filling the place with Starbucks, you know?
Right.
Maybe you'll get some changes.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah.
Even though nobody in the island could afford a freaking cup of coffee from Starbucks.
But, well, you know what I mean.
I know what you mean. But, well, they're saying, like, right now, one of the first things that are happening is Google is going to start wiring up the island for internet.
There you go.
There you go.
We've talked about the opening in general. This is the inevitable end of it. I think this is one of the things that will be, you know, one of Obama's big accomplishments in office, along with the Iran deal and the health care and, you know, these things. This is one of the things where, you know, 10, 15, 20 years from now, when people summarize the Obama administration in like 5 bullet points, this will be one of them.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Obama also went to Argentina.
Oh yeah, yeah. Anything exciting
over there? Well, I think it's a good thing. I mean, in terms of the fact that for the last over 10 years, the previous presidents of Argentina had been like people that had been either like in cahoots with the Cubans or like with Venezuela, and spewed a whole bunch of nonsense about hating America, even though most Argentinians had a favorable view of the U.S. and this is just the president, whatever. But I think it's a good thing that that the relations with multiple countries in South America have improved markedly in recent time.
Speaking of that, any update on the Brazil saga you mentioned last week?
Oh gosh, no, that thing still keeps brewing like a freaking like cauldron of a mess.
Okay, so the last thing I had on my list was actually, did you hear this thing about what John Ehrlichman from the Nixon administration said about the drug war?
I think that what I heard was a big fucking waste of time or something.
No, not that much, much more than that, or much different than that, actually. So this is, by the way, the article is by Dan Baum in Harper's Magazine from the April issue, but it's online now, entitled Legalize It All. And in this article, he is talking about the war on drugs and how to win it by just going to legalization. But what is sort of the biggest, oh my God, really, statement in this is this paragraph near the top of the article where he's like, at the time, I was writing a book about the politics of drug prohibition. So he's talking to John Ehrlichman, who was in the Nixon administration. At the time, I was writing a book about the... Yes. It's no longer the Nixon administration.
Yes. Just making sure that was clear to everybody.
At the time, I was writing a book about the politics of drug prohibition. I started to ask Ehrlichman a series of earnest, wonky questions that he impatiently waved away. "You want to know what this was really all about?" he asked, with the bluntness of a man who, after public disgrace and a stretch in federal prison, had little left to protect. He was involved in Watergate, of course.
Yeah.
The Nixon campaign in 1968, here's his quote. "The Nixon campaign in 1968 and the Nixon White House after that had two enemies, the anti-war left and black people. You understand what I'm saying? We knew we couldn't make it illegal to either be against the war or black. But by getting the public to associate the hippies with marijuana and the blacks with heroin, and then criminalizing both heavily, we could disrupt those communities. We could arrest their leaders, raid their homes, break up their meetings, and vilify them night after night on the evening news."
Oh, my God.
"Did we know we were lying about the drugs? Of course we did." I must have looked shocked. Ehrlichman just shrugged. Then he looked at his watch, handed me a signed copy of his steamy spy novel, The Company, and led me to the door. But basically, for those, well, I don't remember. Yeah, it was when I was like 1 year old or something. But during the Nixon administration was basically the start of the modern drug war. It was ramped up during Reagan. But the Nixon administration is really when they started cracking down and saying, OK, we're going to go after marijuana. We're going to go after heroin. We're going to go after these things. We're going to start
zero tolerance.
You know, so this is really the start of the drug war. And then you have one of the people in the administration who was responsible for the decisions to do those things, not even just directly saying it wasn't about the drugs, it was about going after the damn hippies and the blacks. We wanted to go after the anti-war people and we wanted to go after the blacks because they were, you know, against the Nixon administration. And so we made up the drug war to target those groups.
I just really want to puke.
However many millions of people have gone to jail in the time, how many lives were ruined because of this? And by the way, so many studies have shown that, like, however many billions of dollars we've pumped into the drug war has had exactly zero effect.
The incarceration of, like, mass incarceration of blacks. I mean, you know, we've been talking about that and how Obama has been, you know, making an effort now to try to reduce that and decriminalize a lot of this stuff. And
well, you
basically undo a lot of this shit.
Well, there's been untold damage to the African-American community from this. There's been untold damage to our economy, too.
To our economy, too. No, I agree.
There's been the militarization of police that's been directly related to the drug war. We talked about civil liberties and everything in regards to terrorism, but those were eroded before that by the drug war. Everything from, you know, seizure of assets and all this kind of stuff. And like I was trying to say earlier, when you look at actual usage of drugs, none of this had any effect whatsoever.
It's not like
you even, like, reduced, you know, the use of these things.
No, they just incarcerated a lot of the people that they wanted to incarcerate.
And meanwhile, by driving these things underground, you know, you produce this whole illicit economy, increased crime, you've got this whole drug trafficking underground economy that exists that funds all kinds of bad things all over the place. And, you know, much of it grew up in response to the drug war. You know, just like, you know, prohibition in the 20s caused all kinds of negative reactions. Same thing with the drug war. It's been a hugely negative net effect on our society. You know, even if you believe some of the propaganda of, oh my God, drugs are bad, we have to stop them. And by the way, some drugs are very bad and very harmful. But reacting to it in this way does not make those problems better. It makes them worse and has all kinds of collateral damage. And here we've got this asshole basically coming right out and admitting that it was never about the drugs in the first place. It was about targeting the political enemies of the Nixon White House.
Nice. Anyway.
And on that cheery note, let's end the show.
Well, one final note to up the cheer. I'm actually being facetious because it's not upping a cheer. Rob Ford died.
Oh, yes. Yes. The former mayor of Toronto, who was known for
being quite eccentric, to have said the best words out of him and says, yes, I have smoked crack cocaine, probably in one of my drunken stupors.
Yes.
That line will forever live. He passed away.
From cancer.
Yeah. Very young. I mean, he's freaking our age. I didn't realize he looked, to be honest, he looked a lot older.
Well, you know, the crack will do that to you, I guess.
I guess the crack and all that alcohol. I mean, he was 46. I mean, it's like our age. So, anyway.
There you go. Yeah. Thank you, everybody, for making it through yet another Curmudgeon's Corner. Thank you. If you actually make it to the end, you deserve a prize of some sort, but we're not going to give you one other than our appreciation.
Our appreciation.
Yeah, there you go. As usual, find us on Facebook. We're at Curmudgeon's Corner on Facebook. Most of you who are listening have probably already liked us on Facebook, but if you haven't, go like us. And even if you have liked us, comments, questions, things to talk about, things you'd like to hear us say, all that kind of stuff. We love to interact with you there. And on Twitter, I'm at Abulsme, A-B-U-L-S-M-E. Yvonne mentioned a couple things he tweeted with articles. I've mentioned a few things I've tweeted. So you can follow along there and see those as they happen over the course of the week and respond there. And that's it. You know, other than that, tell your friends and have a great week, everybody. And we'll talk to you next time. We don't have any big new election results before next time, I don't think. It's just North Dakota and it's going to be uncommitted. So, well, I guess there's some on the Democratic side, but who cares? It's Clinton. Anyway, thanks everybody. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next time. Goodbye. Are you going to say goodbye, Yvonne?
Bye.
There you go. Bye, everyone.